this final December episode for 2021, Andrew spends some time talking about what's happening in Lansing and some of the issues that lawmakers are trying to tie up before they head home for the holidays. We also spend a few moments today talking about the Build Back Better bill that has now moved on to the Senate over on the federal level. A few issues ACS Keene is supportive of in there, including paid family leave and expanding subsidies for the Affordable Care Act. As we look to 2022, we also talk about New Year's resolutions and things we need to keep in mind. And so we welcome Dr. Rahika Gagoy from the Gynecological Oncology Team at Karmanos Cancer Institute, Wayne State University. We spent a few minutes talking about screening and things that we all need to be prepared for as we kind of make our resolutions for 2022. And finally, we're also excited to welcome Zach Gorchow, the executive editor for Gongwer News Service, and Matt Resch, the president and CEO of Resch Strategies here in Lansing. And we spend a few minutes kind of, you know, taking a look at 2021, really kind of putting headlines to it, reviewing what happened, and really looking forward towards 2022. So Ashley Hall joins Andrew Sheppers here on The Candid Connection, brought to you by Karmanos Cancer Institute and McLaren Healthcare, the largest provider of cancer care and research in the state. Hello, everyone, and happy December. This is the Candid Connection, and I am Andrew Sheppers. And as you notice today, I'm here by myself. Ashley Hall is my counterpart, is actually off on a well-deserved vacation for a few weeks. Although if I said that she was off on assignment, she might think that was pretty cool too. But no, she's off taking some well-needed and well-deserved vacation this week. So we'll look forward to seeing her back. But welcome to December and happy holidays, everyone. I'm very festive today, as you can see with my ugly Christmas sweatshirt on. And so, you know, we're really excited about things that, you know, the holidays coming up and everything that we've got looking forward to, spending time with friends and family and hopefully in a very safe way. But there's still some work to be done here, and so let's kind of get into it a little bit and talk about what's happening here in a state level. And so lawmakers are here for two more weeks in December, possibly three before they head home for the holidays. Not a lot of our issues in terms of coming up and being considered. One thing we are looking at and working on is a package of bills, Senate Bill 720 through 722, which was actually being pushed by the Michigan Department of Treasury, but changes some of the taxing language and whatnot, but also provides some concerns for us, as it now provides an opportunity for kind of a multi-different tax level based on like certain levels of nicotine or being products being less harmful. And so, you know, when we talk about tobacco, we talk about it's all harmful. Doesn't matter whether it's less harmful or more harmful. There's no real definition of that. It's just all harmful at the end of the day. And so we've got some major concerns with that. And so we could see some potential action on that in the Senate Finance Committee here within the next couple weeks. So we're going to be watching that. You know, next we talk a little bit about oral chemo. And I know if you've been, if you're a diehard listener or viewer of the show, you know that, you know, this is our main issue for this year and will be our main issue next year until we, knock on wood, get it done during this term. But, you know, we're kind of running into some roadblocks now with some other bills that are just kind of clogging up or creating a logjam here for all these other bills to come out of the Senate. And so, you know, we're continuing to do our efforts today to make sure that, you know, we continue to stay engaged and involved with our senators. And so, you know, we've got, you know, we've got a website that we've prepared that has a lot of the information that we're talking about, a lot of our one pagers and whatnot. You can see that scrolling down here on the screen, but those listening, you go to fightcancer.org/fairness to find some of that info. But if you're just looking for information on where we're at and things that we know so far, it's a great place to do that. But right now, you know, as we're getting into the holidays, we are asking, we're asking folks to reach out to their senators to make sure that this issue continues to stay top of mind. And so if you head to our website, fightcancer.org/MI, you'll find an action alert there. Gang, it's 30 seconds. Just go ahead, do some clicks, fill it in, and go ahead and get it to your senator today to let them know that oral chemo fairness should be a priority for Michigan. So, now we're going to change gears here and move on to things happening in D.C. And D.C. lawmakers really find themselves under the gun here over the next few weeks as some major priorities really have to be taken care of. One deals with essentially funding the government. And, you know, as we're taping today, you know, the House and Senate have passed a short-term measure to fund the government through February 18th of 2022. So another continuing resolution that kicks the can down the road for a couple months, but really continues to keep government going through the holidays and you know, gives lawmakers a little more time to go ahead and figure this whole government funding issue out. And so, but as we were as we were getting ready to tape today, over the past couple of days, there's been some real contention in terms of moving this continuing resolution forward. And so for those in DC that thought that this was going to be the easiest road and easiest issue to work on, to see that there was feedback and blowback so far, a lot of folks are really kind of had maybe a little bit of an eye-opening experience having to consider the other bills or the other issues out there. Of course, we all know the debt ceiling issue is out there, and that's during the middle of the month. And so, you know, we essentially have to raise our credit card limit here in the United States. But more importantly to us, and an issue that ACS CAN has really invested time in, is the Build Back Better legislation that came out of the House. And so, we've been seeing, you know, reports from the news and hearing stories about this legislation going back and forth and how just it was difficult for House members and House Democrats to really kind of put a plan together and move forward. Now the bill is over in the Senate. And so, you know, we're moving on to another chamber, which has its own, you know, it has its own kind of pitfalls, ups and downs, and roller coasters yet to come. And so, you know, one of the real big things we're excited about when it comes to Build Back Better, it deals with really expanding healthcare coverage, subsidies for those who are on the ACA, actually putting together a national paid family and medical leave program, something that a lot of other developed countries have, but the United States does not. And finally, the federal government is putting a tax on e-cigarettes. So something that is long overdue. And so it's finally time to go ahead and, you know, continue to treat these products like tobacco and put taxation on that. And so, you know, where we're at with that, and as things continue to move, there's still a ton of work that has to be done in the Senate. And so, you know, I would say that there probably would not be much action on this out of the Senate until they get to the first of 2022. So, So that's it for our updates today. As we talk about, we've got a great show plan coming up in terms of what's happening. We're going to have a conversation with Zach Gorchow and Matt Resch. Zach from Gongmore News Service and Matt Resch from Resch Strategies here in Lansing to really kind of sum up 2021. What are some of those big headlines in terms of state government and where health issues are at? And what we can see for 2022. So that's coming up here after our break. But now, as we get into the holidays and move into 2022, we start to think about resolutions and what is it that we need to do to get ourselves in a better place, whether it's better with family and friends, new careers, even health-wise. And I know that we're all, I think all, most of us are guilty of talking about trying to shed a few pounds once we get into the new year. But one of the things that we really don't think about is cancer screenings. And, what is it that we really need to do to continue to stay healthy? And so we had an opportunity earlier this month to sit down with Dr. Rahika Gogoi from the gynecological oncology team at Karmanos to talk about the screenings that are out there and what folks who are looking to make sure that they're healthy for 2022, what screenings should really be on their resolution list for the coming year. So here now is our conversation with Dr. Gogoi. Well, New Year's is right around the corner, and that means New Year's resolutions. I know that I have continued to struggle with mine every year. As I always say, I'm going to lose or shed those few pounds, but I always seem to fall short. But there are more important things to think about as we move into the new year, and that is your health and cancer screening and cancer prevention and kind of how they all fit together. And so we're really excited today that we have Dr. Rahika Gogoi from Karmanos Cancer Institute. She works in their gynecological oncology team, and she's joining us today to kind of talk about some of those things that we maybe need to think about for our New Year's resolutions for 2022. So, Dr. Gogoi, thanks for taking a few minutes to join us today.
Thank you, Andrew. Good afternoon. It's great to be here.
Yeah. So, as I kind of started out, our New Year's resolutions are right around the corner, right? As we're now here in December, we're kind of facing down the holidays, which all those good, yummy sweets and cookies and candy, and then onto those New Year's resolutions. And so, for those that may be concerned about cancer, when they're starting to talk about New Year's resolutions, what should really be on the top of their list?
Yeah, I think you bring up a great point. So, this time of year is really a good time to think about kind of the things that we need to do to keep ourselves healthy. And especially with COVID, a lot of us have sort of missed our routine screening appointments, have been afraid to go into the hospitals or to see your primary doctor. And so it's really important that that continue to be sort of part of our daily routines. So as you point out, screening is really essential, right? The best thing that I as an oncologist can do is to prevent you from ever developing a cancer. And for me specifically, as a gynecologic oncologist, it's to prevent gynecologic cancers. So a few screening things really come to mind. Most importantly is obviously routine yearly exams with your gynecologist.
Okay. Gotcha. So now, as you focused on the on kind of your subset there that you work with, now is it kind of a blanket screening for everyone, or are there really certain ages where all of a sudden be like, oh, I should probably get in and see someone?
Yeah, there are very specific ages that organizations such as the ACS or the American Cancer Society or our organization recommends. And so really, you know, women should have regular gynecologic exams.
Okay.
Cancer screening really begins at very specific ages. So for example, for cervical cancer, if that's the prevention, if that's what the cancer that we're speaking about first, you know, different organizations have anywhere between the ages of 21 to 24 to begin yearly screening with pap smears. And then depending on your age, that can be extended from every 3 to 5 years. So that's probably one of the earliest screening methods that we use for gynecologic oncology. But as you said, there are different ages.
Gotcha. And so, you know, so then folks that are looking to get their screening, is this a very, you know, is it a difficult or easy process, or is it something fairly simple, or, you know, what are folks really facing? Cause I know that there are folks that are even afraid to go to the doctor every once in a while for physical. So, I'm imagining this is a simple process, but how does that process really work?
Yeah. I'm here to really reassure you that it's a simple process, right? It can be certainly very daunting to go to a gynecologist to have your exam. It's not something that people look forward to, certainly, but it's a simple process. Really, having a pap smear takes less than a minute to be done, and that's it. So really important that you go, really important that you have a conversation with your doctor about screening, about your risk factors. Important also in terms of cervical cancer, and something that I can't stress enough is the importance of HPV vaccination. So something to really talk to your doctor about, whether you fall into the category of patients that should consider a vaccine, where you can go to get a vaccine. But again, a very simple process.
Yeah, no, that's a great point in knowing that. I mean, you know, thanks to COVID, vaccine seems to be a word that we talk about all the time now. Yeah. But I think really folks forget about the other vaccines that are important too. And HPV is definitely one of those. Mm-hmm. And so, well, folks have any questions or maybe are looking for some resources, is there a place that they can go to maybe find more information about what's offered at Karmanos?
Yeah, certainly. So, you know, in general, a lot of information comes from organizations such as the American Cancer Society in terms of screening and gynecologic cancer prevention. But certainly within Karmanos, the gynecologic oncology site at Karmanos will be able to give you more information about what services are available, who the physicians are that you could have consultations with, what kind of services we provide, the surgeries that we do, that kind of information. But a lot of great prevention information really from websites such as the American Cancer Society.
Gotcha. And we'll include those websites in the show notes just so that you got them. But, you know, those are cancer.org or karmanos.org. You can go ahead and find information there or call Karmanos at 1-800-KARMANOS. Well, Dr. Gogoi, what do you really look forward to as you kind of head into the holiday season here?
You know, I'm looking forward to spending some good quality time with my family, and being healthy and really sort of enjoying our time together.
No, amen for that. I think that, it's nice that we can finally get back together and spend time with family and be able to do all that. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. We really do appreciate it. Again, great information. Head to karmanos.org, the website, or call 1-800-KARMANOS. If you have any questions, they can definitely direct you where to go, or definitely check out the links in our show notes. Again, joining us, Dr. Rahika Gogoi from the Gynecological Cancer Multidisciplinary Team at Karmanos Cancer Institute. Thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Andrew. Be safe and stay healthy.
Yes, you too. Thank you. Well, coming on next after the break, we're going to have Zach Gorchow from Gongwer News Service along with Matt Resch from Resch Strategies to talk about 2021 and really what happened here in Lansing and how the healthcare policy landscape really kind of moved or didn't move in 2021. So stick with us after the break. This is the Canada Connection brought to you by Camanos Cancer Institute and McLaren Healthcare, the largest provider of cancer care and research in the state.
At Carmanis, we specialize in providing cancer care that you can't get anywhere else. Because we're home to one of the largest clinical trials programs in the country, only Carmanis can give you access to more than 250 of the most innovative and promising cancer treatments available. And with locations across Michigan and virtual visits, we offer easy and safe access to the expertise and guidance of your cancer team. We do all of this for one reason, to give you your best chance.
Welcome back. Well, every time at the end of the year on our show, you know, we always kind of take a minute to take a look back. And so we've invited a couple guests today that, you know, I really feel like we'll have an opportunity to kind of sum up everything for us this year. So, and just kind of 2021, how it went, what some of the big headlines were, and then, you know, talking about some of the healthcare policy stuff. So joining us today is Zach Gorchow. He's the executive editor for Gongwer News Service here in Lansing. And joining us is Matt Resch, who is the president of Resch Strategies PR firm here in Lansing. Well-known and well-renowned for their great work. Gentlemen, thanks for joining me today. I appreciate you taking the time.
Hey, good to be with you.
Yeah, thanks, Shep. Appreciate it.
Yeah. So, hey, 2021, we're almost done. If you could sum it up in a headline, Zach, we'll start with you. What would the headline for 2021?
That's good. That's actually his job. So I'm glad you asked him to do the headline first.
Well, that's a good one. I would say probably off the top of my head, I would say COVID continues to rage, but also fades into background.
All right. All right. I like that, Matt.
I was going to go with also a COVID theme. I was going to say COVID chaos plus partisan divide equals little legislative achievement.
Yeah. No, I think that sums it up. I think that sums it up pretty well. It's been kind of an awkward year, I feel like. Not a lot of policy movement. But a whole lot of money came in. And so really trying to figure out how to spend a lot of that money. And so, you know, COVID has really affected things and kind of talked about that a little bit. Matt, how do you feel issues have really been prioritized because of COVID during this time?
Well, it almost feels like there have been two legislative sessions going on at the same time. The one that has to deal with everything that's COVID related. You've kind of got this kind of weird shadow boxing between the legislature and the governor where they're trying to take away her powers and she just vetoes it. And everyone just knows this is a vote that's not going to mean anything and she's going to veto it. And you've got then all the spending that comes with the federal funding. So you've got that stuff and you've got, you know, the oversight hearings that have been happening in both the House and the Senate when it's come to COVID responses and the, kind of the dysfunctions of government that have been shown because of COVID. And then I think you've got the day-to-day stuff that is that makes up a typical legislative session. But, you know, and Zach would know better than I because he follows this more closely. But that's not really getting any attention outside of the couple of publications that cover the Capitol really, really closely because the spotlight has been on these big issues, which really haven't moved. It's been a lot of partisan fighting. And I think that's really, you kind of have, it's a tale of two legislatures this last year.
Yeah. Zach, feelings on that?
I completely agree. It's been a year that I would describe as bereft of any significant policy statutory changes. It's really been one where you've sort of had there's the money dynamic mm-hmm. where they did push through a budget. Albeit with only a fraction of this federal largesse, state surplus that's come in, getting pushed out the door, and no real sign as to when the bulk of the remaining money, the extra money, is going to get pushed out. You've had the governor has basically decided she wants to talk about anything other than COVID, which is a big sharp turn from 2020. The legislature has been pretty consistent in deciding it doesn't believe the government has any role in regulating COVID and thus is doing nothing.
Then
you have this, as Matt put it, shadow boxing, where the legislature has basically decided it's going to take a bunch of performative actions that will have no real effect on anyone's lives, passing legislation that they know the governor is just going to veto, or even more sort of head scratching, these non-binding, meaningless resolutions that where they, you know, urge Congress to do something. I'm sure Congress is just itching to get the memo from the Michigan legislature on what to do. And it's just been very, I would describe it as a very strange year, where a lot of stasis. You know, we do a top 10 laws list at Gongwer at the end of the year, where we look at the 10 statutes we believe are the most impactful. And I got to tell you right now, we could be straining to fill out that list, because there's really not a lot for anyone to really go back and say, boy, we really made a difference here.
Kind of clamor on to. Yeah, no, I get it. And, you know, you talk about issues, right? And, you know, for the Cancer Society, two real big issues that kind of fit in for us. One is tobacco, and two is access to treatments, right? And so, you know, tobacco prevention has been, or tobacco policy has really been kind of in the forefront. I think all of you've seen the package be, you know, reintroduced from over in the Senate dealing with e-cigarettes. And then we also had the cap set permanent on cigars, which, you know, on our end, is something that, you know, that we're opposed to. You know, so we feel like it's really taken a back seat, I guess, as we kind of move into 2022. What are your feelings? I'll start with you, Zach, because I know Matt, his company works with a coalition. His firm works with a coalition dealing with some of these issues, but I want to get his take too. But, you know, where do you see these tobacco prevention issues really moving, right? I think the governor came in being like, I'm going to be hard on tobacco. But yet we haven't seen a lot of effort to really kind of push back at that. And so, you know, where do you see kind of these tobacco issues going once we get into 2022?
Well, I think you teed it up pretty well, which is that the governor seems to have raised the white flag as far as being sort of a stalwart on tobacco issues. I mean, you know, she came in pretty strong, you know, issued the rule, you know, emergency rules regarding vaping, and made clear she wasn't going to go along with the idea of simply banning vaping for minors, that she wanted a much more all-encompassing approach.
Yeah.
And all of the sudden, I mean, I guess this would be one of the more quieter things that probably should have gotten more traction outside the Capitol. But when the governor then lost in court on the emergency rules regarding vaping, but all the while was going through the permanent rulemaking process, which she has total control of. There's no legislative role there.
Yeah.
And as they're about to take effect, yanks them. I'm shocked. It really happened under the radar, and decides, you know, now we really want to work with the legislature on something more all-encompassing. And again, it just felt like the governor had, you know, the change she wanted in her hands, but for whatever reason, decided she wants to work with the legislature on something that, you know, your organization opposes.
Yep.
And it seems to me they've decided they just can't win on the issues they want in the legislature, don't want to poke the legislature right now. They want to push this money out, you know, billions and billions of dollars out the door. And so they're trying to do everything they can to maintain a, you know, a decent relationship there.
Yeah.
And some folks are getting, you know, caught up in that, where their issues are getting waylaid as a result.
Yeah. No, Matt, you know, so the last step in those rules Zach brought up has to go in front of the Joint Committee on Administrative Rules, which is a legislative body, JCAR. You know, are they really a scary kind of group to get in front of to work on these rules, or kind of has the governor really lost a lot of political will, I think, with the legislature to kind of work on some of these issues and really make an impact?
You know, it's interesting, JCAR and Zach will be a better authority on this. It's like no one even remembers that JCAR exists until like every 4, 5, 6 years, some random thing comes up, and all of a sudden, oh yeah, there's this JCAR thing, and the legislature tries to go flex their muscles or what, and you have to try to explain it to people who aren't here. It's like, what is this group? Who are they? How does this all work? You know, it's, I don't know that this book will ever be written, but it would be fascinating. And Zach mentioned the governor's position on COVID restrictions, her stance on this. I mean, if you remember, she got massive national television news coverage for this. I mean, today's show appearances, all kinds of things around her vaping order, and to just abandon that. I mean, what happened there behind the scenes that kind of changed direction? Because she at the same time has never been one to say, oh, you know, I'd really like to work with the legislature. That's not really been her mode. And in her fairness, they haven't wanted to work with her either. So yeah, there's a real mystery here as to what the true motivations are. But the larger question, I think, about where these issues kind of fall, unfortunately, I think until some of this COVID money is spent, we move past whatever this current situation is. This issue, along with hundreds of others, will just kind of be on that gigantic second tier of things that are important to deal with, that people are focused on, that groups like yours and advocates that are members of yours are working for and care deeply about. But the legislature and the governor's office just don't have the attention span to deal with them.
Yeah. Well, that's a shame, because I know there are a lot of people that are struggling and looking to find ways to quit. I think, you know, a good example is that we had $200,000 in the budget extra to help the tobacco prevention efforts here in the state of Michigan, and that got cut out of the conference committee. So, you know, it's just a little frustrating to not have a governor come out and say that she's, you know, going to be a stalwart and fight for those against tobacco, and then end up kind of seeing everything fall flat. Well, another issue that we talked about that is important, at least to us, and an issue that we've been working on for 15 years, it'll be 16 once we get into next year, is oral chemotherapy fairness and House Bill 4354. First time ever we get it out of the House this year. Big event, but yet now stuck in the Senate, that came over in a whole big package of bills. And so I don't, you know, Matt, we've worked on this issue before. You know, what do you think are really some of those major issues that are really holding this up? And do you think we've got an opportunity to see this legislation actually get to the governor's desk?
Well, you're right. For years, it's always been the House that's been the hurdle. Like, we would get it through the Senate with some pretty wide margins of votes and get it over to the House, and it just would get tangled up in the politics of health plans and those lobbying efforts. You know, I think one thing, and this is, I think, you know, it points, you mentioned a second ago, Andrew, about the frustration. I mean, the folks who are your members are such kind of, they're real folks. You know, these are cancer patients. These are advocates.
All of their people.
And, you know, we've met a lot of them. They're just, and when you try to talk about how the legislative process works or doesn't work, it just doesn't register with real people, because it's like, how can something like that work? And I think a lot of things with these health packages, you know, the House dumped this huge healthcare package on the Senate health policy chairman. I think he thought, who are these House people to dump this big agenda on me? This isn't my agenda. Yeah. And so then he started sending stuff back to them, and they're like, well, until you pass my package, I'm not going to take up your bills. And now we've got this infighting between leaders of the same party who are not passing each other's bills because of ego and because they are, you know, they got their nose bent out of shape about who did what first. And until that all sorts itself out, and hopefully it will, I think this has fallen victim, like a lot of other bills that have fallen victim to this kind of, this silly kind of ego fight between these two leaders.
Yeah. Well, Zach, hopefully you got a little brighter outlook, but.
No, I think Matt laid it out really, really well. You know, the other factor I would maybe throw out there, and I don't have any, this is just me speculating. You know, anything that involves a perceived mandate on business historically has run into trouble in a legislature where groups that oppose mandates, like the Michigan Chamber of Commerce, the insurance industry, you know, they tend to inveigh against this, and you know, that becomes a problem. You know, the chair of the House Insurance Committee is term limited. She may not be looking to do much else, so there's not a lot she may be risking. But the chair of the Senate Health Policy Committee, Kurt VanderWaal, he's running for Senate Republican leader. He's potentially looking at a very difficult primary fight, depending on how it shakes out in the state Senate because of the way the lines are being redrawn. And, you know, again, I haven't talked to Senator VanderWaal, but I've been around long enough to know that if you're a Republican looking at leadership or looking at a potential primary, you're going to be hesitant about poking in the insurance industry and the Michigan Chamber in the eye. Yeah. And so it wouldn't surprise me if some of that is what's going on. Now, having said that, from what I've observed of Senator VanderWaal, he's very interested in health policy that really helps people. He's certainly been interested in meeting with a lot of different groups and pushing bills forward. And so I don't see him as being some sort of intransigent ideologue on this issue or anything like that.
Yeah.
But that could be a factor. And Matt made a great point, which I think people really outside the Capitol community don't understand, is how this sort of ego battle where you get some Senate bills into the House that the Senate wants moved and some House bills into the Senate that the House wants moved, and they can really, that can become a real problem. Yeah. You know, if you don't move these bills, we aren't moving your bills. And that could be a problem here too.
Well, I'm glad they're putting that new visitor center on. We'll have a little more room in the building. be nice. So, well, hey, so now let's pull out your crystal balls, right? And let's go ahead and kind of take a look at maybe a year from today or a year from now. If you were to think, you know, some of the major headlines, we'll say policy-wise, and then we all know it's an election year, so I'd be interested to kind of get some headlines around that too. Zach, we'll start with you. What do you think some of those major headlines are going to be in December of next year?
Well, I mean, on the policy front, a little difficult to say because we'll be into a lame duck session.
Yep.
You know, who knows what could, a lot will depend on, is Governor Whitmer reelected? You know, who's controlling the legislature? If it ends up being status quo, I don't necessarily see, I mean, I'm sure there'll be a few things people want to try to clear the decks on, but I don't see a ton necessarily happening. If the governor were to lose reelection, then I think very little will happen.
Okay.
That the legislature will be like, we're not moving anything of yours. They're going to, you know, block her appointments and so forth. At the same point, if I don't think this is likely, but if the Democrats were to, you know, win the legislature and Governor Whitmer gets reelected, you know, again, that could be more of a situation where, you know, not a whole lot will happen. So I guess I've given you three scenarios where not a whole lot will
happen. sounds like
Well, that would follow. Follow this last year and what I think will happen most of next year, which is not a lot's going to happen.
So. Yeah. Now, election-wise, I mean, all the dynamics are pointing toward a good year for the Republicans. I mean, first we have a Democrat in the White House, and the president's party historically struggles in Michigan and nationally, for that matter, but especially in Michigan in the midterm. So you have that going on. We have a situation where, you know, Governor Whitmer is the first governor to go for reelection for a second term with their party in the White House. That hasn't happened since Milliken in 74.
Okay.
And it hasn't happened for a Democrat since Swainson in 62. Okay. So that creates a very difficult environment for her. And I think that's why we're seeing her rapidly try to move back toward the center. And not lose the independent voters that were so, you know, really helped her pour it on in 2018. I think she's got her work cut out for her. I think she's the favorite. We do, you know, no Michigan governor who's sought a second term has lost since we went to a 4-year term in the 60s. They're undefeated. Incumbents traditionally do well for statewide office in Michigan. But I think it's going to be close. You know, I think one of the things she does have going for her is I think it's not the strongest possible Republican field that's out there. You know, if Candace Miller had run, I think Governor Whitmer would be in serious trouble. I think she would be in a fight for her political life. As it stands, I think she's a narrow favorite based on the field that's out there. But, you know, it's clear she's going to have a challenge. I think both Jocelyn Benson and Dana Nessel are going to have their work cut out for them, especially Dana Nessel, because she had such a close race 4 years ago. But again, who do the Republicans nominate? I mean, they could be putting up some real fringe people for those races, and opportunities to win those seats could slip away because they nominate fringe candidates that could be easily campaigned against from the Democratic standpoint. And lastly, I'll just, as far as the legislature goes, I think the Republicans are favorites to keep the legislature, even with the new independent commission redrawing the lines in a way that is better, certainly better for the Democrats than the current maps, and certainly better than if the Republicans were drawing the lines again. But the way we're so geographically polarized now, you know, Democrats used to be able to compete and win seats in the Upper Peninsula, the Northern Lower Peninsula, some of these suburban rural areas like Monroe County and Muskegon County. And those areas have just become so Republican. It's hard to see how they get to 56 seats in the House and 20 in the Senate, but I think it'll still be pretty even.
Like
Republicans at 21 seats in the Senate and maybe 57 seats in the House, something like that.
Okay. Well, and I see Matt went to black, which
Zach was talking so long, the lights
and I'm sorry. I killed
Matt and I, being recovering Republican staffers, I'm interested to kind of get your take on 2022 and what some of those headlines are.
Well, you know, Zach, I think covered the headlines. I mean, the governor is incredibly vulnerable, and I think you don't need to look farther than her own behavior to see how she knows she's vulnerable. I think if she thought that she could continue going the path that she was going over the last year, she'd still be doing those things. And I think it is just remarkable the about face she has taken on this COVID thing. I mean, she was parading before cable news daily, talking about all the stuff she was doing for COVID. And now it's a completely different person. But she can't be beaten by nobody. And that's basically what the Republicans have right now. They don't have anybody. They have, I don't know, a dozen or so people who are trying. I've yet to see one that looks like they have risen to kind of the level that I think she should be afraid of. I think, you know, you look to states like Virginia and a candidate like Glenn Youngkin and what he was able to do. You know, he got through a pretty a bitter primary too, and had some fringe folks he had to fight off. But at the same time, ran a campaign that was very kind of kitchen table issues for the most part that people were able to relate to. And I would hope as a Republican that these candidates would be able to recognize that and realize that they need to talk to a broader audience, because the governor already is. She is already not doing the things that Terry McAuliffe and others did in D.C. as far as their rhetoric and the issues that she's picking to talk about. So I think they're going to be, she's got smart people around her. She's a good campaigner. And I think that the Republicans have a lot of wind at their backs, but they could also screw it up.
I hear you. I think that's a great point, talking about, you know, folks, at least on the Republican side, there's no one that really kind of, you know, maybe light your fire a little bit and really get you excited about. So, I guess it's kind of a wait and see. You know, we'll see how everything kind of falls out. Lastly, before we go, and I think probably the most important question that we can really talk about today is that it is the holiday season. As you can see, again, I'm in my Christmas outfit here. You know, I'm a huge baker. I'll just admit it to everybody. I'm a huge baker and a candy maker. So I make fudge and going to try peppermint bark this year. So I'm pretty excited about that. But, you know, if you could have that one cookie or piece of candy on your plate for the holidays, what would that be? I'll throw it out to anyone to start.
Well, you had me at peppermint bark. If I'm going candy, I'm going peppermint bark. If I'm going cookies, I'm going with the, I don't even know what they are, but like the iced cookies, kind of the sugar cookies that are in the different Christmas shapes or holiday shapes. Yeah, that's where I'm going.
Cutout cookies, like it, Zach?
So my in-laws, they do these peanut butter blossoms that are really good. You get that soft peanut butter cookie. And the Hershey's Kiss on it. I really look forward to that one. So we have an interfaith family. So over on my side of the family, I'm always very partial to Hanukkah gelt, chocolate coins. It's got to be good, though. There's some really bad gelt out there. It tastes like chalk. It's no good. But if you get the good stuff, and it's got the, you know, menorah kind of embedded into it with the shape, and that's good stuff.
See, Andrew, most of my childhood, my Christmas cookie experience was limited to these wonderful women at our church who would make a bazillion cookies and make these trays, except they would sit on the trays for so long before they would deliver them to people that they all tasted exactly the same. And so we always joke that every cookie tasted exactly the same. And it's like, I didn't really know what their unique characteristics were until much later in life.
Well, if I got some extra, I'll make sure I'll get some bonus. You can enjoy it for the holidays. Zach, Matt, thank you so much for taking some time out of your busy day to join us again with us today. Zach Gorchow, the executive editor of Gungor News Service, and Matt Resch, the president of Resch Strategies here in Lansing. Gentlemen, have a happy and safe holidays. And, you know, hopefully we'll get back to doing nothing once we get back. Over
to thanks, Andrew.
Have a good one.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Andrew.
Well, that was a great interview from Matt and Zach. Thank you so much for joining us. Well, you know, we're really kind of winding it down here for 2021. And so we just want to say thank you for joining us and being a part of our podcast this year. And also, you know, thank you to Karmanos Cancer Institute and McLaren Healthcare for their support of our program. And, you know, we couldn't do the things that we're doing without their support. But we also, now that there's a special group that is really involved with all that we do here. And so we wanted to take a minute to say thank you to them as well. So enjoy this quick video from all of us here at ACS CAN in Michigan.
Hello, ACS CAN Michigan, ACT leads, ambassadors, volunteers, deputy ACT leads, everyone in the ACS CAN Michigan family. I just want to say thank you so much for all of your hard, hard work this year. Michigan has made a huge impact in the cancer advocacy legislative process, both in the state and federally. I know I haven't been with you all very long, but we did get to go through the, you know, most fun part of the year together with Federal Lobby Day and Lights of Hope and Policy Forum. So I am so looking forward to getting to know all of you more next year. And I just can't wait. And again, thank you so much. I hope you all have a wonderful holiday and a very, very happy new year. Let's get it done in 2022.
Hi, wonderful Michigan volunteers. I'm Michelle Zimmerman. For those of you who don't know me, I'm your regional media advocacy support staff here at ACS CAN. I just wanted to take a minute to say thank you so much for all of the amazing media work you did in 2021. So many of you received the Media Star distinction during Leadership Summit and Lobby Day this year. And in fact, Michigan had the most media stars in the entire country. So congratulations, everyone. And I can't wait to see what we can accomplish together in 2022. Happy holidays. Thank you for everything.
Greetings. Greetings, ACS CAN Michigan volunteers. My name is Lauren Codom. I'm the Director for Grassroots Organizing here at ACS CAN in the Great Midwest. And I just wanted to take a second to say thank you. Thank you for everything you do all year long to help make ACS CAN a strong organization. The time you put into learning about our policy, the time you put into educating lawmakers, and the time you put into helping members of your community understand who we are, what we do, and why we're so important to the fight against cancer. We couldn't do this without you, and for that, I just want to say thank you. I also want to thank you for your fundraiser this year and outfitting all of ACS CAN in these wonderful 20th year celebration t-shirts, because without you, we wouldn't have them. So thank you for everything you do, and here's to a fantastic 2022.
Good afternoon and greetings, Michigan volunteers. My name is Sarah Manader. I'm the Managing Director with ACS CAN, coming to you live from Superior, Wisconsin at the tip of Lake Superior. I've been with the organization 21 years, and Michigan is a new state for me. I've been getting to know Michelle and Ashley and Andrew, and getting to know the state, and hopefully getting to know you as volunteers. I am bringing you holiday tidings, and I want to wish you and yours a happy, joyful, and healthy holiday season. You are a force to be reckoned with, and don't ever forget it. I am really looking forward to the day when I can come meet you all in person. So please, I hope you have a great holiday season. Thank you for all you're doing to move our mission, and have a great new year. Thanks. Bye.
Hey, everyone. Just wanted to take a few seconds today to, first of all, I hope all of you have a wonderful holiday season. I hope that you take this opportunity to unplug and spend time with family, reconnect, and really just embrace the holidays. But I know for me during this time, I spend a lot of time thinking about what I'm thankful for. And I'm extremely thankful for all of your effort, your dedication and commitment to our mission, and your engagement on all of our issues this past year and since your time here with ACS CAN. So from all of us here in your Michigan team, and from those that have come and gone, we want to say thank you for your commitment, and we're looking forward to a good 2022. Happy holidays and happy new year. We'll see you after the new year.
Well, that sums it up here for 2021. We just, again, want to say thank you to all of those who, all those that have helped us out throughout the year, your dedication to our mission, and the commitment you've made to help those facing cancer. So with that, we will see you again in January 2022. Again, please be safe, happy, and healthy, and we'll see you in the new year.